This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. I'm Jeff O'Neill. She is Rebecca Shinsky. We're recording on Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. And today is our summer preview draft.
I am out for vindication.
We've got a lot to talk about before we get started here, because I've got several concerns I need to address. With
Are you concerned you're going to lose this time?
I'm concerned I will not win fairly, because this, because we talked explicitly about how everyone wrote in to say, boy, I thought if Rebecca was going to win, I usually like Rebecca stuff better. I'm worried about the sympathy vote poisoning otherwise.
The sympathy vote.
An otherwise pure and fair test of strength.
I think that by sympathy, what you mean is people like me and I make good choices.
The narrative for that to be true is that everyone accidentally voted for me last time. They got confused and said, you know what? So I'm concerned people are coming back to say, you know what? I really feel bad about Jeff's clear and decisive victory last time.
You're like advance rating on my parade here.
But see, then if we're both wet, then we're both even. That's the thing. I'm a little concerned. Well,
maybe we shouldn't take votes this time if you can't handle it.
Oh, I can handle it. I'm going to be a very great winner and extremely terrible loser.
Well, as is the custom here on the Book Riot Podcast. No one here is a good loser, and that's just
fine. A magnanimous winner and just a sordidly gross loser.
You know, I took control this time. I made the draft list.
I would like to talk about this, too. I would like to talk about your obvious honeypots for me you dropped into this thing.
Look, I know you.
Look, I know... In the Hebrew alphabet, Jehovah starts with an I, for those of you who get that reference. I'm not stepping on the J. I'm not stepping on it. I might step on the other letter. The problem is that you and Michelle and my daughter are all smarter than I am. You'll make one trap so obvious I won't see the other one. That's my problem.
Well, you know, this list
Look how smart I am. I see the trap. Whap. I get hit from the side. Clever girl. From the side.
Life finds a way, my friend.
Life finds a way.
It's noticeably lacking like five really wonky business books.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry about that.
I also have a point of order for a future draft. And I'm not sure this is interesting to you. We do this. So what we did last time is last time I populated the board of available picks. This time Rebecca did.
Mm-hmm.
I think next time it would require extra work. I think we should come in blind. There should be no shared list.
Okay.
Because I would have included some other things, which I think makes it interesting. Because it's like the real NFL. They don't tell you these are only 100 people you can pick. You got all 18-year-olds that hit people hard to pick.
Theoretically, any 18-year-old in the world.
That's right. You could have picked me at 18. Would have been a waste of a pick. But I declare myself eligible. Just a thought, because there were some things. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not quibbling with your list necessarily. It just occurred to me that there's I don't know how much of my list would have overlapped, but it'd been funny to have like I didn't know about that, or I thought about that, or gas. I don't know. I thought that would be a fun element.
You know,
to think
I mean,
about in the future.
The list is made for quibbling, but also our next one will be the big fall preview. And that is I think that is the right season in which to come in blind.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
See what we can see.
We haven't talked about this list at all to this point. My first blush, and again, even if I had swapped out my three or four, ones I would have for sure put on here, I don't think this quote unquote strength of the list would have changed. Is it kind of a weak list? Am I looking at this wrong? I don't feel like it's as strong as we've seen before, but maybe I'm biased because you came up with it and I'm horribly terrible.
I went back and looked at the list we had for the spring one.
Yeah.
And I think they're pretty even. I think this year is not a year with a bunch of big, it doesn't feel to me at least like there's a bunch of big flashy books so far. Maybe we will get some in the fall. There are some books on this list I'm excited about, and there are some books on this list that I've read already.
Yeah. But I haven't read any of these. I've read like yeah, zero.
Yeah, but I think it's like it feels like kind of an average spring book season.
I guess the last one we had the Lahiri, we had Andy Weir, we had the big Kristen Hanna. So we had like three. I think of those are bigger sellers than any. Well, not the Lahiri, but
maybe
like we don't have like a shared wheel. Is there a shared wheelhouse book really on here?
Not particularly.
Not really. Like, there's some authors we like together, but we're not like, oh, there's our pick. Anyway,
yeah, that's true.
That
and maybe I think maybe we need to redraw the seasons, because if May...
I agree. I was thinking about that too.
If this were May, June, July,
yeah,
I think the list would have been juicier.
Because then we pick up Andy Weir. Then we pick up Lahiri.
Right. Yeah, and the big new Maggie Shipstead, which came out yesterday.
Yeah, The Great Circle, which we didn't talk about on the draft
it's
for this
so
year.
It's so good.
I'm going to read that this summer. Yeah, I'm going to read that this summer.
It's
sure.
really great. It's really, really good. Oh. Yeah, I think maybe the spring books preview is like March, April, May.
I think that's right. May they're releasing summer reading stuff. I think you're absolutely right about that.
Spring is really February, March, April. Yeah. Summer is May, June, July. Nothing happens in August in publishing. And then the fall books preview is September, October, first part of November,
and that's basically. Yeah. You know what? That's seconded. Chairs passed.
All right.
We're including May into the January through May will be our spring.
Oh, no. May was in the last one.
I'm sorry. January through April will be our spring. May through August is our summer. And then September, October, and whatever we pick up in the rest.
Is fall.
We'll go there.
That's
okay.
The plan.
And we'll,
all right.
And then for next, in the fall, we're going to come up with our own lists. we're each going to navigate Edelweiss like animals. Listen, you get the participation trophy for wrangling. This shouldn't be this hard to do.
It should not.
It should not be this hard to do.
And there was a point where I gave up on wrangling Edelweiss and I went to Google. Most anticipated.
What an indictment
of
the publishing industry.
And I used some of our own new release index.
I was
going to
say, how far does that go out? I haven't looked at it in a while.
It goes a couple of months out. So it's pretty robust for May and June. Yeah. I think there's some of July. So I had some good resources there. This did actually doing the research for this draft was a really fun day because it led to downloading a million galleys of things. And my reading has been fun since then.
That's really great.
But I think this is a good plan we have.
And I guess we're going to be reading. Some of these things will be out by the time we're going to do a best books of the year so far. I've got a couple contenders already. I'm going to read. I think there's at least four books on the list I for sure will read myself. I think that's what might count. But let's do our sponsor break and we'll get into it.
Today's episode is brought to you by Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group. I have for you a swashbuckling fantasy that is full of demons, possible gods, ghosts, and an ornery mule. So, Essevar Boros is one of the legendary sword-fighting magistrates known as the Greatcoats and the king's personal investigator of the supernatural, and he is no stranger to tales of ghosts and demons. So, when the fractious monks of the abbey, rumored to be the birthplace of the gods, begin warring over claims of a new pantheon arising, the frantic abbot summons him to settle the dispute. Armed only with his famed investigative talents, his faltering skill with a blade, and imperious, his ornery mule. In the words of Donkey from Trek, though, he's a noble steed, okay? Armed with all those things, Estevar must root out the source of the madness lurking inside the once sacred walls of Isola Sombra before its chaos spreads to the country he's sworn to protect. Pick up Crucible of Chaos by Sebastian de Castile for all of the wonderful things I just described to you. I mean, it sounds like a good time. And thanks again to Mobius, part of Hachette Book Group, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Taming Seven is an epic and unforgettable love story in the international best-selling and TikTok phenomenon The Boys of Tommen series from Chloe Walsh. So Tommen's cheekiest lad, Jared Gibbsy Gibson, has always been a comedian, but inside he is haunted by events of the past and he uses humor to cope, hiding his true self from the world. Then you have Claire Biggs, who is the epitome of sunshine. She's always loved Gibbsy, her brother's friend and her favorite neighbor. She also has always seen a side to him that no one else seems to notice, and she becomes determined to tame her wild at heart childhood best friend. So the Boys of Tommen series is an internationally best-selling YA romance series that has taken TikTok by storm. It's perfect for readers looking for new adult slash crossover romance, dual point of views, friends to lovers, marathon-worthy TikTok books, and angsty tearjerkers. Taming Seven is published today, and it's the fifth book in the series, so make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, rules of the game. There are 24 weirdly titles on it. Nice round number. We're going to pick what? 8
each?
10 each? So four of them will not get selected. And the goal here is to pick the best basket of reading.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, if we're building somebody's summer reading plan.
And that unknown person likes books, and that's all we know about them.
Right?
Okay. So get ready. In the show notes, I will break down by Rebecca and then the winner who picked which books. That's how they'll be arranged. And then you can email us at podcast@bookriot.com to let us know why you chose mine.
And I hate to do this, but I think since I made the list, you get to go first.
I think you're right. Oh, one quick thing before we do that. Can I do the couple ones I may have included, but I see why you do.
Oh, yeah.
One, I think, has the biggest print run I saw. Now, maybe I missed this. And I don't even know how to say this dude's name. So this is a great start. What's the guy that wrote The Silent Patient, Alex Michaelides? Is that his name?
Yes.
Has a book coming out with a million copy print run in May.
Holy moly. Okay.
So if I would have done that, again, I won't read that book. But I think that would get our Kristen Hanna spot. Because we don't have anything on here that's in the million-plus print run, as I saw. Not to your knowledge. Okay. But my first pick, there was another one. Did I have another one? The Woman Who Wrote Migrations has a new book coming out.
Oh.
So I think I would have included that. I'm not sure I would have picked it, but that one I would have included on here.
All right. Okay.
I think those were the only, and that one had a 250,000 print run, which is a pretty big deal for a literary fiction title, really.
Mm-hmm.
Migrations, people are still buying that book. I got it from my mom a while ago. Anyway, all right, my pick. Speaking of number, I think my pick is going to be what I think is the biggest, listed print run that I saw. And this would have been high on my personal board anyway. I am shocked to see that it's getting a 350,000 print run. Do you know where I'm going with this? Do you have any sense of where I'm going? No. Ashley Ford, Somebody's Daughter.
Yes, I've read it already.
It's great, apparently. The blurbs are amazing. It's good?
It's good.
Okay.
I'm
not surprised. Ashley Ford, who's been a friend of the show over time, she's been on the show a couple times. She was on for Reading Lives. When she was doing her series on Audible, she came in and talked about that. We're horribly biased for her, I guess. Whatever. We know her a little bit. I knew that she's been working on this book for a while, as sometimes happens with the book. I think the blurb and the blurbs, she's got a lot of friends in the industry. There's like Roxane Gay and Glennon Doyle have really wonderful blurbs on it.
Mm-hmm.
Take blurbs with a grain of salt. Actually, blurbs are made of salt, show title.
Blurbs are indeed made of salt.
But the print run, don't lie. Print run, don't lie, Rebecca. Print run does
it's
not
true.
Lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a memoir. Ashley Ford's a wonderful writer. The thing she talked about in Reading Lies, God dang it, I canceled that show, didn't I? Turns out she talked a lot about her life in books. And the thing that's at the core of this book, her father's been in jail most of her life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the table. It is the table. But it sounds like, and tell me if I'm wrong here, it's the core around which this memoir is going to spin. Is that fair? Is that how this works? Okay. She's a wonderful writer. She's in the Roxane Gay school of like radical transparency, I feel like. Like, you know, even more than like confessional poets like Anne Sexton and stuff. Like we're in a different era of openness and authenticity, and confession is wrong because confession implies sin, right? But like, here's the real shit, man. And here's what's really going down. And here's where I failed. Here's the warts and all, and the good and the bad. She's a wonderful writer. And I'm so glad to see that it looks like this is going to be a real thing. So I think this is your really well done, big, feels summer book of the year, and it is my number one draft pick, Rebecca Shinsky.
I am mad at you.
I think we can end right there.
But it's fine. I've just been mad at you all week.
Yeah, there you go.
Just did Moms, Dads, and Grads.
That's right.
I was mad at you for half of that recording. It's fine.
Ross Gay Book of Delights was a real coup on that spot. Anyway, not to gloat, but
such
to do it
a
for
good
a minute
one.
Anyway.
Such
so I got that.
One.
I got my number one overall draft pick.
You know, it's good. That's what I think. I've read 6 or 7 of the ones on this list of 24, and somebody's daughter is really excellent. I couldn't be happier for her. So I'm mad at you, but I'm happy for Ashley Ford.
Yes, I am too.
I'm starting with big, juicy novel that you read on the beach.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. This might have been my one.
Yeah, I'm going with Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. She's coming hot off of Daisy Jones and the Six.
Well, no, this is her debut novel, isn't it? Malibu Rising?
Yeah.
This is a hot writer. We should pay attention to her.
You got California. You have a family of 4 siblings who have had kind of a tumultuous life, and there are secrets, and there's a big party, and the whole story takes place over the 24 hours running up to and then after the big party, and it just feels kind of decadent and juicy. And I'm glad that I've read it already, but I'm also sad for future Beach Rebecca not getting to read this on the beach. I think it's like a perfect aquamarine cover with hot pink letters. If you were walking through an airport on your way to vacation, you'd be like, that is the book. That is what I'm going to read while I sit on the beach. It's wonderful and really fun. It's exactly what I want to read going into summer when my brain is like, hey, guess what? Vacation. Even if my body is not on vacation, my brain wants to be. And Malibu Rising was, I mean, just excellent. She tells a great story.
It's a good pick. That's at least my chosen number two pick on the board. Wait, stop that. Does J. Courtney Sullivan have a book out this summer?
I don't think so.
Okay. She was on a pace there to make herself the, you know, like a pendulum.
Yeah.
Like
she had one last summer.
Like
last
the daffodils coming back every May with a beach read. That seems like it fills that. I'm going with the book my better half was most absorbed in the last 12 months. This author has a new book coming out. So look, I trust Michelle's taste implicitly. If
I
she's
can't
into
wait
a
to
book,
find out what this is.
Casey McQuiston's new book, One Last Stop.
Okay.
Her debut novel, literally her debut novel for real, Red, White, and Royal Blue came out 2 years ago now. What is time? I don't know. But it's a romance that's was set in a political world. And Michelle actually liked the political machinations more than she, and she thought it was a good romance too, but she was actually more into it for that degree, but was really into it. I think one of the big breakout hits, also a wonderful beach read, One Last Stop, is New York City, 20-something love story, except there's a time travel element. I feel like I'm going to... This feels like a spoiler-filled blurb, so I'm not going to do too much of that. I'm going more off the strength of Red, White, and Royal Blue was a real crowd-pleaser. Summer is a crowd-pleaser. This is the crowd-pleasing time. This is just like at the movies, you get the blockbusters. The fall is for awards. Actually, January and fall is when you put your I'm going to be a finalist for the Penn Faulkner's debut International Fiction Award stuff out. This is... You're buying it, you're reading on the beach, you're reading in the hammock, you're reading on the plane, you're reading on the, I'm doing a plane, trains, and automobiles thing from like a John Candy situation. But this is going to be the kind of thing that people are ready to do. It's going to be light. It's going to be fun. It's going to be what you're looking for to read during the summer. It comes out June 1st. Let's see. Are we doing publishers? No one cares. St. Martin's Griffin, June 1st. Kind of on the long side, 432 pages. It's the only thing that gave me pause there. The Red, White, and Royal Blue was on the long side.
But reads quickly.
Yeah. Also, I have to say, one of the most anticipated on the Amazon page includes Book Riot's little blurb on there, too. What are you going to say? So there's me, Casey McQuiston's One Last Stop is my number two pick.
That's a solid beach pick. My next one, I'm staying in the land of fiction for a minute, I think. I'm picking The Other Black Girl by Zakiya Delilah Harris.
Now, can we talk about what you've told me about this? Because does this matter? I'm surprised to hear this high. So talk to me about this.
Okay, yeah. So I finished it this morning.
You did finish it this morning. Okay.
Yeah. The pitch that the publisher is making is it's like The Devil Wears Prada meets Get Out. And it's set in a big publishing office. It's about the main character is a Black woman who has been the only Black woman in the office for a while, far too long. And then another Black woman gets hired. She's the other Black girl of the title. And there's like something sinister maybe about her. There's something off. Or like she has motivations that the main character doesn't trust. I mean, it's a debut novel. It's big and fun. It's a really ambitious premise. I think it's a fun read. I thought it was like a little bit maybe messy in how it quite hung together. Mm. She's trying to do a lot. I do think like this is a fun read. And I also think that there are things built into the story and like cultural references that I am not the audience for and that I might not have even picked up on. That Zakiya Delilah Harris is particularly writing to Black people, especially Black women who have had that moment or had that extended experience and of being the only Black person in the office. And some of it was like cultural commentary that I was like, yes, I have observed white people do these things. And some of them are things that I think probably are most relatable or only relatable to folks inside that community. It is a fun read. It's not like, as you just said, this is the season of crowd pleasers. I think it's going to be a crowd pleaser. And if you know anybody who's adjacent to publishing or like finds this to be like kind of a glamorous world, there's nothing like a novel that that shows you exactly how glamorous it isn't.
I did 18 Zoom calls with public professionals over the late 8 days. Let me disabuse you.
Right. Like Younger is really fun to watch, but it does make publishing look kind of glamorous. And this will disabuse you of that notion. But she takes on, like, publishing really does have a race problem, and she takes that on in a way that is both really sharp and really entertaining.
I think you sandbagged me by saying, I don't know about Other Black Girl. Have you read it? I really need to talk about it. You should read that. And then you're like, yeah, I'm coming out hot and picking at the top of my list. Okay, you're fine. Never, no problem.
You're never going to know.
Never going
to
know.
You just have to wonder.
Just hear and know that was nothing but a red herring. All right, I had a couple of branching possibilities out here. I think I'm going to... Don't want to zig or zag. My inclination is to stay on the summer reading vibe, but I'm not going to do that because I'm so high on Brandon Taylor that I think I need to pick Filthy Animals. Which at first I was like, when you put it in here, hadn't looked anything. I knew we had a new one out, but I didn't look. I was like, short stories. I tend not to pick short stories. Mm-hmm. Short stories just don't go wild. Like unless it's interpretive maladies, they don't tend to pick up. But this is link short stories, which is meaningfully different, right? Because it can hang together in a different kind of way. And this is 20 something creatives in the Midwest trying to figure their lives out. I think it feels like all of the difficulty and clear-eyedness and elegance that Brandon Taylor brought to real life, and maybe stretching his wings a little bit, you know, inhabiting different points of view a little bit more and hopping around. I really like link short stories like this, where it takes place in a similar place in time. And, you know, they have sometimes, you know, one will appear in another. I don't really know, but I'm high enough on Brandon Taylor that I think if this is good, which I have no reason to think it will be. He got a little bit shut out, got nominated for stuff last year for Real Life. If this is good, I think we're award season series. I mean, his name is already out there. People are ready for it. We're ready for it in a way. We knew him from his writing at LitHub and other places online. So we knew, but I think now there's enough of a sort of mind share platform for this really to jump up a level if that happens. So that's why I'm picking Filthy Animals.
I am realizing that one of the side effects of having made the draft list is that I'm going to be excited about all of these
picks. I know. I was going to say, it's like, these are great picks. What genius. What witch of magical taste is picking all of these bangers?
And I'm like, yes, correct. Brandon Taylor should go high on this list. Like, if he can't go high on my list, at least he's going high on yours.
That's right.
I feel that way. Brandon Taylor has a great Substack where he does like literary criticism and talks about art, and it's wonderful. Cool. Yeah, that's a good one. My next one, staying in juicy fun summer fiction, is
you're
the
just
startup.
Gonna, you found a groove, and you're just
I did.
Gonna,
I'm
you're
in.
Just gonna
I'm,
pound it. Okay.
I'm in a good place. The Startup Wife by Tamima Anam, which is a novel about a young couple who are married and work in tech, and they build an app that replaces religious rituals, and it becomes like one of the. It blows up. It becomes one of the like biggest social media sensations. Millions of people are using it, and they're like creating their own sort of personalized rituals every day. It's you got technology, you've got like questions about human connection, and what about the ways that humans have lived our lives for I guess as long as we've had human history, can we disrupt with technology, like what is actually persistent. I love a feminist bent on startup culture, so I'm really excited about that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. Sidebar.
Sure.
Kind of out on the Silicon Valley satire stuff. I've read some. It's been done. I don't know. I'm not sure. We need another take. Maybe this will be it. That made me think. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I was like, I've read stuff. It's like, oh, it's Silicon Valley. There's an app. There's a thing. And it goes sideways. That was the only thing giving me pause. I was like, I wasn't personally kind of excited about it. Now, that's my list. I'm not sure that would matter. But I feel like, I hope it's great. It might be great. But I feel like that kind of like genre is a little long. We're in like another, we need to be like in a new era of.
I think.
Tech platforms in Silicon Valley have been too important for it to be sort of funny satire stuff.
I
need more dystopian.
Well, maybe, yes.
Yeah.
More dystopian. And the newer era of it is that they're not all by like white dudes or white women who worked in startup.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And maybe that will usher in a different sensibility because I am feeling a little, I'm not sure. You got to give me something else here.
Okay.
I need a thriller to round out my basket. I've got a couple choices I can go. This is one where I'm going to let the print run be my guide because print run don't lie. And I was coming down to Intimacies by Katie Kitamura or Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And Razorblade Tears has 150,000 print run. Intimacies does not. So I'm going Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby for my thriller pick. I've had some lightness. I've had some tears. I've had some love. I've had some pathos. I need some thrills. I don't even know what this book is about. I know S.A. Cosby, you really like Blacktop Wasteland. Mm-hmm. You said it might be a little violent, scary for me. I believe
it's
you.
It's a little, yeah, it's over the O'Neill violence threshold.
Yeah, this is even just looking at the blurbs, I think this is almost in the Brandon Taylor vibe of the first one kind of came out. We needed to get to know the book and author, need to build a head of steam. The print run for, let's be honest, sounds like on the literary side of genre, but still a genre thriller, mystery kind of a situation, that's a big print run for something like this, for a second novel that's not a name brand at this point. Feel like it has some heat here. So I'm going Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby for my next pick.
I've read that one and it's good. Hey, good job, Jeff.
Good job. Good job, Rebecca, for picking things for me to pick.
Yeah. I like this print run research that you've done.
I mean, again, if you haven't read them, it gets you a little bit out of what I like. You know, just like what am I interested in myself? And also, here's the other grain of salt. Print publishing doesn't know. They're guessing like everyone. But in terms of they have to commit, right? Like that's a financial commitment that they really have to make. Also, that usually means, like we've talked about this before. This is how it snowballs, right? And I don't know what the chicken comes before the egg, but someone decides this is one of the books we're going to get behind. And getting behind it means a big print run, publicity, and marketing. And they all, you usually don't have one without the other two. It's not like you have a big marketing thing without a big print run. You're not going to do a big print run without the big marketing thing. And neither of those two things are you going to do without a publicity push. So like you either have all three of the triangle that is necessary for a success, success. It's not sufficient, but it's necessary to give something a chance to get that lift. And this says to me, this has a chance to get that lift. And if they think it has a chance to get that lift, I mean, they think Blacktop Wasteland sold. It continues to sell pretty well. I think we hear about it from time to time and I see it around. And they're getting behind this book and they're trying to make this author
Yeah.
And people, a thing people come back to. So I'm kind of falling on the coattails of, I like this sophomore effort that has heat behind it. Kind of a vibe. Mm-hmm. I'm into this right
I
now.
I like that vibe too.
Yeah. All right. Where are you going next?
All right. Now I'm going to be.
Wait, stop. Sponsor break. Sponsor break.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books and all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode.
All right. Okay, now you can go.
Okay.
Proceed.
All right, now I'm going to my big summer feels with Thanks for Waiting.
Damn it.
A memoir by Dori Shafrir.
Yeah.
She is formerly of BuzzFeed. She wrote a novel about startup culture, and now she is one of the co-hosts of the Forever 35 podcast.
Which you are horribly biased for because you listen to that every time, right? You listen to this regularly, right?
I listened to it super regularly for a while, and now I'm sort of in and out. I am in a deep love affair with Ezra Klein right now.
Oh, okay. Those are long too, right? Those
are
like
they
super
are.
Long.
Yeah. My podcast listening time is limited, so I tend to be like a little serial monogamist about it. But anyway, this is a memoir basically about being a late bloomer. She writes about being in her like late 20s before she really figured out her career, being in her mid to late 30s before she really settled on the idea of wanting to find a partner to spend her life with. And then she was, you know, at her, I think almost 40 when she got married, and then they had a child in her 40s. And so that's the thread running through this memoir, but it's so, I think just also very like raw and vulnerable, and really talks about just that struggle of like not being in the same place that you see all of the people around you are in, and how, what that can feel like, especially what it felt like to her to have that be just sort of like the narrative of her life, was that she was always a couple of steps, like got to the thing later than everybody else did. And she writes about how she came to understand herself, and also that now she can understand this as kind of a gift that she has taken time to know who she is before she gets on a treadmill or gets on a trajectory for life that seems set. I found it to be really wise. She has a lot of compassion for herself, and I think that encourages a lot of compassion for readers to have for themselves. And she just, you know, tells the kinds of stories about like mistakes that you make in your 20s and early 30s that it's validating to know that other people have made those as well. In the back, I mean, maybe like 20%, the last 20% of the book, she writes a lot about her experience. She and her husband dealt with infertility for several years. Mm-hmm. So I want to like flag that if you have difficulty reading about that, you might want to have a heads up. I think she does a really beautiful job writing about it. And she and her husband, Matt Myra, hosted a podcast through that whole experience together. Like every week they sat down together and talked about what it was like. The show is called Matt and Dory's Excellent Adventure.
You know, there are many things I would like to do with my partner. That is way down.
I cannot imagine doing that. I can't imagine like sitting down with Bob every week and recording a live show where we talk about our shit. Like, I think it's so brave, and there's a lot of brave stuff in the memoir. It's a great read.
I don't know it's like being an emotional nudist. Like, I don't know how you do that all the time. Like, that is wild stuff.
It is. The book is really wonderful, and I think she pulls off that trick of talking about hard things, but it feels like a breezy summer read. So that's Thanks for Waiting by Dori Shafrir.
That's a good one. I'm going to go kind of in the same vein. As Dolly Parton says in Steel Magnolias, laughter through tears is my favorite emotion. I also need an audiobook. I need something I could feel like is going to be good on audio for my road trips, everything going else. So I'm going The Ugly Cry by Daniel Henderson. Daniel Henderson, writer, TV writer, podcast host, nerdy person, really funny. This looks like it's going to be a self-aware undressing, revealing of her own childhood growing up, raised by her grandmother after her mother abandoned her to live with her abusive boyfriend. She grew up one of the few black kids in an upstate New York neighborhood and has become, as she says, an odd person. This is my flavor of odd person. I really like everything Danielle Henderson has done. You may know she created feminist Ryan Gosling as one of her joints. She wrote for several TV shows that I cannot think of right now off the top of my head, and I had notes here somewhere.
Oh, one of them was the Megan Abbott cheerleader adaptation USA.
What was that? She also wrote for Difficult People. Yes. Oh, and she wrote for Maniac, which was that Jonah Hill, Emma Stone odd thing that I really liked, by the way.
I did really like that one, too.
That's our flavor of mess. We never talked about that, but I'm not surprised that you liked it as well. Memoir on audio. This is it. This is what you want in audio. And I think Daniel Henderson is enough of a performer and enough of an authentic sort of voice that you're going to get more than you bargain for with what she's going to do there. I'm really looking forward to this one. Do you do galleys on audio? I haven't gotten into the volumes thing, Libro thing that some of our contributors do. If I were going to do it, I'd do it for this, but I haven't done this stuff before.
I do it through Libro, through whatever they have. But I read this a couple of weeks ago, and it is great.
Okay. Turns out, funny, weird.
Turns out, I mean, I
can't wait to pick the one where, like, I read that a couple of weeks ago, and that was a total turd fest. Gotcha.
I am not going to say that.
Yeah, all right. Strong pick.
We don't poo-poo the things here.
No, that's true. We don't do that. Just lay traps for Jeff and hopes he falls into the bottomless abyss.
Daniel Henderson is so smart.
She's great.
Funny.
And she hasn't had a book out in a while because she's been writing TV. And she has a podcast and I think a newsletter that might be a Substack. So she's kind of fallen out of my, I've moved away from wherever she was living. And so when I saw this, I was so thrilled. That I'm going to get to do my favorite audiobook thing and do a memoir by someone who's funny and open at the same time.
Yeah. Here's one I'm going to be listening to on audio that I haven't read or listened to yet. Miseducated, a new memoir by Brandon Fleming. This is as close as I get to a wow, the power of books story. Look, we've been doing this a long time.
I know. Books are great, but they're not magic. We get it. We know. This is where we are.
Yeah, so this is Brandon P. Fleming is writing about the transformation that he was able to make from being a school dropout who had a drug addiction into being an award-winning Harvard educator by the age of 27, all through literature and debate. He suffered a career-ending injury when he was playing sports at a Division I school. He dropped out of college. He had a really hard job after that and became depressed and then had a drug addiction. And when he returned to college, he was just like bound and determined to reinvent himself, like do it right this time. So he dives into, wait for it, Jeff, the Black Thinkers of the Harlem Renaissance. I cannot believe you didn't take this one earlier just to keep me from taking
it. I don't see, look, I don't have to do with a book like that because like, are there people, I mean, I, why everyone should read that, but I'm like, now I'm all in my feels about like, everyone is not like me because I'm a weird dude myself. So it's hard to know. Yeah, I was circling that one. I mean, it's on my list, but it was it was down a little bit.
I'm putting this in my basket because I think it's one that everyone should read.
Yeah.
And I do some of that with my basket here. You know, like it's not all crowd pleasers. Some of it is you're going to like this. You just don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. I think I was kind of between that and Ugly Cry for the memoir, and I went a little bit more funny. I wanted a little bit more funny just to put in the basket, but sure. I'm definitely going to be reading that for sure. All right, where am I on my board? I'm all the way around here. I've got my thriller still on the board.
Oh, yeah, we're halfway. We've gotten five rounds.
Got a couple more to do here. I got another memoir. I got a couple more memoirs. You know, I think I'm going to go ahead and pick up my other thriller that I had on my pick. I'm going to pick up Intimacies by Katie Kitamura. This is another one I don't know much about, but I knew her first book did very well. It had a real, it had like a New York kind of reader moment, didn't it? And when people were out Instagramming things in their tote bags with, it had one of those covers meant, like we've seen covers like this before, like A Separation had a very like bold, it almost looks like fire, I guess, kind of a pick. But this one, I don't happen to know much about. I really liked A Separation. I tend not to do too many thrillers. This one doesn't come out until later in the fall, or excuse me, in the summer, like late July, which I always wonder about. But I like, I know a little, it's set in The Hague, and I like international stuff. So I don't really know what's going on there, but I think she's an interpreter or something. And so I like that in between, you're around the halls of power, but you're not like the director of the CIA. I always like that in a thriller kind of a thing. So you have to explore the thing and you might get some privileged knowledge because someone said something in Turkish. You didn't think they understood that you understood, but you actually did. I'm not really sure, but I'm a little bit on the strength of her previous thing. And people really seem to like her. Like she seems to have a following. It's a Riverhead book, which they're really good at marketing this kind of stuff to the right people.
That's true.
Also, this is a weird thing to say. It's got this bright fuchsia color vibe that I haven't seen on a book in a while. And I wonder if that's going to make it pop as people are trying to show off what books they're reading on Instagram over the summer. So Katie Kitamura, I'm going to be reading this for sure because it sounds like a thriller, but not too scary. It's got a little political stuff, maybe a little love interest. I'm not sure. But I don't know too much about it, but I kind of like that in a thriller where I don't know too much about it. So that's my next pick, Intimacies by Katie Kitamura.
All right. I'm going to go for short stories for my next one.
That one is, I think the most specific pick I've seen on here. I'm surprised to see this, but also I know you like short stories. Tell me about this.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm picking After Parties by Anthony Vesna So, who is writing about Cambodian American life, also through the lens of queer and immigrant communities. And I think that often short stories like get sort of pigeonholed for good reason as being like, it's all, you know,
MFA master thesis.
Right, white guys. Right. Yeah. And this has, like, the cover looks like a party. It's hot pink. There are people, like, laying in the back of a truck smoking and hanging out. It looks like summer at the beach and looks like a good time. Also, that will, you know, do that thing that good short stories do where they can go very quickly and incisively to questions about difficult things like race and sexuality and friendship and family. And I'm really stoked to see folks who aren't MFA toting white guys get book deals to do short story collections. I've gotten a lot of publicity in my inbox from this. It's coming from Echo, which is a HarperCollins imprint that also does like smart marketing and really good, interesting fiction. And I think they could position this like there's a ceiling on the audience for short stories kind of no matter what. But I think they, Echo could position this to be about as big as a short story collection. Could be Roxane Gay picked it for her book club. Like, I feel like I'm in good company here, and I'm excited about this one.
Okay. Now I got to avoid the honeypots. We're down to the honeypot part of the... There's several bombs. I'm just telling you, I'm not picking Americana, an unexpected history of the U.S. in 13 best-selling books. I see you. I see what you're doing, but I'm not picking it. I'm not doing it.
I admire your restraint.
I'm not doing it. I will, on the other hand, go for another obvious honeypot. I will fall on this because I'm going to read this. I didn't know it existed, and here we go. The Appalachian Trail of Biography.
Are you really taking that?
I am. I really am.
I put that on the list because I was like, well, Jeff's going to think I'm taking that one.
I don't know. I can't. I have to take it.
Oh my gosh, Jeff. I love you extra.
I have to take it. So it's on the tin. It's a biography of the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
I love this stuff. This is great stuff. Now, you're outdoorsy and you live close to it. So I wondered if you were going to pick it. And I was like, maybe she will. It was a little bit of like, you know, the Vizzini versus the Man in Black. Like, it's not in your cup, but it's my little one of those. I need a history. I want something that's nature, outdoors time for outdoors time. It didn't look... These can be...
It looks good.
It looks good. It's not too long. 272 pages. So that's key for a situation like this. Like, you worry you see something like this, and it's going to be like the 500-page exhaustive thing, and they've got all like the survey data from 1890 stuff. Like, you don't want that. It's a character-driven biography, so I'm not sure about that. It'd be higher up my draft board if I had any sense that it was going to be fun. Is it going to be entertaining?
Yeah,
is it like,
I don't know,
Sarah Vowell kind of a thing?
Or is it
going to be, I don't want to name names, but like, you know what we're talking about here.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about here. But I like this kind of a story. It mixes nature and history, a little bit of science, a little bit of adventure. He worked in public radio and state government.
It wasn't a honeypot, but I'm glad to let it be one.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm picking anyway, but there's a reason it's like number 8 for me at this point. So I didn't say this dude's name. Philip Dianeri, I believe. It's the Appalachian Trail biography. Comes out June 8th. I don't know.
I'm so
I am who I am. I am who I am.
When you can read it with like an informed backstory from your old beloved Bill Bryson.
Yeah, right. I have some. It's not the first book I've read about him.
We are who we are.
People read things, Rebecca.
People read things. I look forward to your take on the Appalachian Trail by Hawker.
All right, go for it. What pick are we on now? I picked one.
I think that was seven.
I think I picked six at this point.
I've picked six. I think that was seven.
All right, I must not have highlighted one. I'll have to go back and look at it. Okay.
I think that was seven. All right, I think it's time for me to do a thriller.
All right.
So I'm picking The Turnout by Megan Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
It's about two sisters who inherited their mother's ballet school. And in the months right before the annual Nutcracker performance, when everything's like heating up and getting just bonkers at the ballet school, things start to go awry. There's a tragic accident and a contractor comes to help them repair what has gone wrong. And he may not be who he seems, and other people are not who they seem, and everyone has secrets. And Megan Abbott does what she does so well, which is like look at womanhood and sexuality and power dynamics and family dynamics and all the kinds of things that people keep from each other. And then when you think you have figured it out and that she has revealed a thing, there is another thing to be revealed. Like, mm-hmm. I am infamously terrible at guessing how mysteries are going to end. Just bad. I am just bad at it. And so I don't even try with Megan Abbott. But it's like, well, there's going to be at least two things that I'm wrong about in a Megan Abbott book. And this one is all kinds of tangly. I read it a couple weekends ago, and I really liked it. And I think it has the, like, the thrillery kind of feeling that I want on, like, a really kind of sultry feeling summer day, mm-hmm. where, like, it's sweaty and weird shit's happening, man. Megan Abbott delivers on that, and I'm kind of banking, maybe I'm overconfident, but I think the success of the USA adaptation for Dare Me, which is the one that's set in the world of high school cheerleading. It did really well on Netflix and, like, got a big Netflix boost. And maybe she'll get some more recognition. She's been one of those, like, great thriller writers who has been, I think, a little under the, like, big mainstream mm-hmm. radar for too long. I'm ready for, like, Megan Abbott should have had a big public breakout, like, four books ago. Maybe this will be the one.
So what's the career trajectory? Like, who's her comp that's up a notch or two in mindshare that you're thinking of?
That's interesting.
Like, who is she? I don't even know in terms of sales. I mean, Jane Harper probably outsells her at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think she and Jane Harper are trying to do different things.
No, I'm just in terms of profile, yeah. though. Like,
that's a good question. I don't know. Yeah. I think I want to see her in... gonna have to ponder that,
because she's like, I mean, Gillian Flynn doesn't write books anymore, but, like, that's the right. glow up version of
yeah,
Meg Abbott's
that,
career,
that's
right?
Exactly, yeah, that's right, that's what it is. Like, I think that Megan Abbott is an equally good, if not better, writer than mm-hmm. Gillian Flynn, and she's been doing the same kinds of, like, noir yeah. really sharp takes that incorporate cultural commentary and societal kinds of questions since before Gillian Flynn was writing. Yeah. And look, I love Gillian Flynn, so no knocks on her, but Megan Abbott should be as famous as Gillian Flynn. That's right. All I'm saying.
Gillian Flynn's writing TV now. Like, I think she's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to, maybe, I'm sure she has a manuscript somewhere working on something, but, like, this happens in peak TV. I mean, with Daniel Henderson, we're talking about too, there's so yeah. many writing opportunities that pay, they must pay better. Right? They have to, I mean, mm-hmm. again, until you're, like, super, super, well, Gillian Flynn made enough money. But anyway, you get what I'm saying. It's like, there's a lot of juice that's just different than sitting by yourself writing a book and right. having it come out every 5 years. There's not as much pop sci on here as I would pick myself, as you know, but I'm going to go the closest thing. Michael Pollan sells books. Mm-hmm. He just does. He writes really good books. I think his trajectory is hilarious because I think... We're starting Truly. Out with the Omnivore's Dilemma, right? Where it's, I'll eat anything. I think his eventual state is he'll only do drugs. No food, just drugs for Michael Pollan. Well,
I mean, in fairness, the drugs he's advocating for are plant-based.
I'm just saying, plant-based drugs. Because the last one was How to Change Your Mind, was like psilocybin and mushrooms. This one is mm-hmm. focuses on three drugs, opium, caffeine, and mescaline. And does the Michael Pollan thing to it. And I'm in. Yep. People like mm-hmm. this. I yeah. can't expect this will be anything outside of the bounds of your expected average return on a Michael Pollan book, but that's a pretty good expected average return writ large. This is also kind of a history of the mind in three drugs is how I would subtitle this if I were writing it and marketing it to me. So I'm into that. Not my first book about caffeine I've read, so anyway, there I am with that.
My first book about caffeine. There are like four people in the world who can say that sentence.
Actually, not even my third book about caffeine. Well, there's History of the World in Six Cups and the caffeine, the culture. Anyway, we can do our podcast about the five best books about caffeine later. But, you know, this, it looks beautiful. There is the kinds of people who buy books and, like, independent bookstore people who buy books about food and being by uh-huh. this book.
That is right.
And so this is Your Mind on Plants by Michael Pollan, also a good narrator. I have not actually listened to his audio only Caffeine, How Coffee and Tea Made the Modern World, but I'm putting that on my audio. Actually, if that's audible only,
do you have to listen
get...
to it? Do you have to listen
probably
to it
not.
On 2X?
Yeah, probably. not a huge, I'm not super interested in drugs writ large, but he...
Today's episode is brought to you by Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you've probably never heard of. And bonus points because it's Finnish. And when's the last time you read a Finnish dystopian science fiction novel? Right. Okay. So in this one, humanity is destroying itself as the cities burn, which sounds kind of familiar. It is the time of the great affliction. In this terrible world, a new hope arises. The Happiness Program, which is the creation of a Finnish pharmaceutical genius, Dr. Laura Solomon. With happiness, pills, mind mapping, and microchips, Dr. Solomon intends to build a new world for the worthy few, which sounds like a perfect plan and nothing could go wrong, right? Right. So this is a raw but fun dystopian sci-fi adventure with an unusual premise describing what happens when technology rules humanity. Either you're chipped living inside the AR society or you're left outside to barely survive. Make sure to check out Unchipped by Taya DeVere. And thanks again to Unchipped, the most epic dystopian science fiction adventure series that you probably never heard of, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Tor Books. So if you are a fan of epic fantasy, if you're a fan of Scott Lynch and or Joe Abercrombie, but you want something a little different, you want a hero who's like a bit of a mess, then The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan is for you. In it, Academy dropout / disgraced noble heir Lacan Gordova's life is in shambles. All he's got going for him is, one, he is a card sharp of considerable skill, and two, a lot of, maybe potentially a little too much, wine. So they're, you know, those are the positives. So when the bizarre murder of his father robs him of even the off chance of redemption, Lacan decides to make amends another way. He's going to unravel the mystery behind the killing, even if it takes him to the underbelly of Sophrona, a city of danger, secrets, and merchant princes. Finding the truth is one thing. Finding the truth and staying alive is like a whole other thing. So make sure to check out The Silver Blood Promise by James Logan on sale May 7th. And thanks again to Tor Books for sponsoring this episode.
Does cultural histories combined with neuroscience, I get a little bit of everything. It sounds like some participatory journalism, which is Michael Pollan going to get high. But yeah, Michael Pollan, This Is Your Mind on Plants is my pick for that one. We better do one last sponsor break. We got to get one last one and we can wrap up. So let's do that. Okay. Where are you going?
Staying in that similar vein, because I was hoping to snag the pollen, is Alice Waters. Yeah. Alice Waters, We Are What We Eat, A Slow Food Manifesto. Alice Waters, quietly radical in the way that, like, she invented the farm to table movement, but she's so focused on just doing the work that she hasn't done a good enough PR job for herself.
Yeah.
And I hope that this book will get a lot of publicity and bring her a lot of recognition, because I think in the food world, like, if you're a person who cares about food or reads about food, you know of Alice Waters, but more people need to know of Alice Waters. What she did is truly groundbreaking. And I'm excited to read her manifesto. Also, it's pretty gutsy to put the word manifesto on the title of your book, but she does this beautiful thing about, like, that food expresses all kinds of our values and what it means to grow food, to, like, support community farms, to know where all of your food comes from, and to think about the ethics of eating in a way that I think is actually something that people can attempt to execute. It's more personally doable than a lot of the, like, well, we need to solve the problem of, like, you know, all of the carbon emissions from the whole beef industry. Mm-hmm. Like, you as an individual can make choices that, if a bunch of us as individuals make the same choice, we can impact the thing. And Alice Waters is really talking about, like, here's what you as an individual can do that you will maybe be able to see an immediate impact. You'll feel more connected to your food. And that's a way that I like to think about what food means to us. So I also like quietly radical. She's a little sneaky, and sometimes that's what you need to get the thing done.
Yeah. I mean, the practitioner zealot, right? There's something to be said. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for that, for sure. In the history of people saying manifesto on their thing, how many have succeeded in actually being, like, it's like the Communist Manifesto, and then it's like a bunch of also-rans. What's the next most famous thing called a manifesto?
A history of uprisings in 4 manifestos.
A history of narcissism in 20 failed manifestos.
Right.
No, I mean, if anyone, I'm less concerned about narcissism in manifesto, it's Alice Waters. She probably had to be talked into calling it a manifesto.
She probably had to be talked into writing the book in the first place.
Yeah. Well, she'll write a book. She's got plenty of books. Anyway, I'm going. Hard Looks.
Oh.
Hard, okay. But You Gotta Go. How the Word Is Passed by Clint Smith.
Mm-hmm.
A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America. Basically, through the lens of key physical places, Monticello, Whitney Plantation, and some other places, tells the story of slavery and its continuing legacy in America and how it still shows up and how neighborhoods are put together, how holidays are put together, how down, you know, how it remains a living, eminent relic of a bygone era, but still is embedded in how we live, how Black people live, and how Black people and white people experience and see the world. Comes out June 1st. You know, we need a bunch. We needed more of these in the future. We're getting more of them, and we need more of them. Also, mm-hmm. a poet.
Yes.
Which adds something to everything. But I think we're going to be looking at a different kind of examination. This comes out from Little Brown. 350 pages, so a nice, you know, a nice size there. Really good pre-reviews. Comes out real soon. Staff writer at The Atlantic. Yeah. All into this.
It's a good pick.
Soon. Yeah. How the word is my, passed.
My entry into Hard Looks. And like we're saving these for the end, not because they're not important, but because they're challenging.
They're challenging. And we knew we had a few to choose from, right? So yeah, there's a few here.
Yeah, is The Second by Carol Anderson, which big print run, because I remember that we talked about it when we did a Deals mm-hmm. episode. But Race and Guns in a Fatally Unequal America. And after the last year, especially, that we've had, and the spring that we had of gun violence and mass shootings here, especially coming out of COVID, but also just the ways that guns are used by white people on Black people in our civilian lives and by white cops on Black people in those kinds of interactions, that this needs a look. America's relationship to guns needs an examination. And this is a big look at the Second Amendment and the, I think, vast distance that exists between maybe the original intent of the Second Amendment and the way that it is embodied today. When it was encoded into law in the 17th century, that enslaved people could not own firearms. There are still disproportionate levels of access to, like, the right to bear arms, and how people are able to access that right is very disproportionate still. And there's a race-based component that's not small of that. And she is going into that. I can't say I'm excited about reading this one, but I know that I need to read it.
Do the work, man, and, right?
Yeah, it's a do the work pick. She's a wonderful historian. I trust her. This is one of those we should all read.
I'm going high risk, high reward for my next pick. Started out as something I included kind of for a laugh, to get you to laugh on a Deals episode. I got turned around with a Jenny Offal blurb.
Oh, I was going to pick this one.
I'm going Night Bitch by Rachel Yoder, in which an ambitious mother decides to give up her career, stay home with her newborn son, and starts to turn into a dog. And in reading some of the reviews, some of the jacket copy, I'm feeling like we're looking at a cross the metamorphosis with domestic fiction vibe going here, which could be really cool and amazing, kind of in the vein of like Alyssa Nutting kind of vibe right here, where it's disturbing and uncomfortable, but also super, super compelling and meaningful. Or it could just be a weird, grotesque, a gargoyle of a novel. It could go either way. It could go all the ways in the middle. My expected average return is probably below pick, But I think there's also there is a chance on the upper end of the distribution probability curve of this that it has a moment, right? That people talk about it and it becomes a thing. So that comes out July 20th. It's also short, which is good for this sort of really high concept. Almost this kind of a thing is the kind of thing you'd see in a short story, right? Almost yeah. kind of this idea. So it's expanded out. So you got to do a little bit more with it, which could be tricky, but if done well, it could get some heat and get some people talking because we talked about it. We've been talking about it. We're still talking about it now. Other people are not that different than us, except the ones that are. And maybe we could have something here. So that's what I'm going with. What do you think about that? You were going to pick it too. Similar reason or anything else there?
I was going to pick it too. I was going to pick it, but the Jenny Awful blurb turned me around also. Right. And I had it in the category of like, we're on the ninth round and my designation for it was weirdo litfic.
Weirdo litfic. Sometimes you get one.
Sometimes you get one and it looks like a good contender. Right. I'm going to read it.
I think I will. Maybe we should do a mini thing about it. Because then we really followed it from deals, deals, deals to publication. We haven't done one of those. Now we've had it all along the Watchtower.
Ooh,
it'd be kind of funny to see.
That would be
fun.
We'll
take a look at it. Anyway, all right, what are you up?
All right, I'm staying in the realm of doing my homework, but also like Ben Rhodes is good for your soul. Mm. So this is After the Fall, Being American in the World We've Made. His previous memoir, The World As It Is my favorite of all the Obama staffer memoirs, which is saying something because I read approximately 25
all
of them.
Right. Yeah. You're down to like the deputy director of, you know, whatever.
And this is about not just why is our democracy threatened, but why is democracy threatened around the world? And in 2017, after he was finishing his work with Barack Obama and beginning to, you know, start a new chapter, Ben Rhodes was like, what is happening in the world? And so he spent 3 years traveling to dozens of countries and he was meeting with politicians and activists and all kinds of folks fighting on the front lines that are dealing with their versions of what we were dealing with here. Questions about nationalism and authoritarianism and disinformation and technology. And this is a big, ambitious book that is part memoir and part his reporting about this and aims to provide some historical context as well. And like, and how do we keep going? And this is a question that is very pressing. So I'm not anticipating Ben Rhodes to have like, delivered a clear answer with a checklist
that we
can follow. Yeah, although if he's got that, I'm into it. I trust Ben Rhodes. But as I'm doing my own, I am finding that coming out of COVID and now having had several months to recover from the election, I really want to be doing my own thinking and sort of catch up homework about like, where are we and how are we going to go forward and not relive, like not make some of the same mistakes as a country that we have been making. And I think that I trust Ben Rhodes to ask the kinds of questions that I want to ask and to make me look at some of the things that I want to look at. So I'm assigning Ben Rhodes and Carol Anderson to everyone for summer reading.
You know, I like, here's someone with a job and you see the world through their eyes. I'm going Committed by Adam Stern, Dispatches from a Psychiatrist in Training. It's a memoir coming out in July. It says what it's on the tin. It's a memoir about being trained as a psychiatrist. And it sounds like it's not an exposé kind of a thing. It's really a day in the life of, life in the life of, look at what it means to become a psychiatrist and what you have to deal with. The pros, cons, the ups and downs, the limitations and possibilities of this profession that is between scientist and sociologist, between doctor and friend, between counselor and clinician. I think it's a fascinating area to look at, and sooner or later, most of us are going to deal with a psychiatrist for someone we care about or for ourselves as we get older or we just experience a life. And it's a lot less. When you think about how many like straight up doctor shows, movies, and everything we've ever gotten. And then we get all those. We got all the Grey's Anatomies, the ER, Chicago Hopes. Like many of us could walk into an ER and fake it, kind of like Leo does in Catch Me If You Can, right? Like you kind of know the thing. What a psychiatrist does, what they do on a daily basis, I think is not out there in the culture as much, I was thinking about. And a psychologist is something different. A therapist is something different even still. But the role of the psychiatrist, I think, is maybe a little underrepresented, underappreciated, mm-hmm. undermined for this kind of material. So I think this is, you know, has a chance to be kind of for this kind of a book. You know, usually, again, I've read four books about caffeine, not one about being a psychiatrist. So there you go. I think that's telling. In some, am I wrong, or maybe I've missed a bunch of these?
No, I think you're right. Also, that was 11. So we're on a bonus round now.
I see. I was like, what are we doing here? So last one. I was like, I thought we were already done. So I got my 11th.
We were. Picks. This one's free. All right. Rounding out, this is one I'm really looking forward to and that I hope will be widely read, is Dear Cenytherin, Black Spirit Memoir by Equica Emezi. You probably recognize their name from books like The Death of Vivek Oji. There's three really big works of fiction so far, very popular. And this is a memoir that is... it's written in letters through candid, intimate correspondence with friends, lovers, and family, tracing the unfolding of a self and the unforgettable journey of a creative spirit stepping into the power in the human world, weaving transformative decisions about gender and their own body with their experience and path as a writer, and also personal relationships and the producing of a book about it. I think memoir in letters is a thing I would read from now until Kingdom Come, and they're not done that often. I'm really looking forward to dipping into that format, and I'm really just interested in Equica Emezi's life and what they have to say.
I'm super high on their trajectory, career to this point. The only thing that prevented me from making it a top pick for me, as I don't have a good mental model of what this reading experience is going to be like. Are these actual letters that were passed back and forth?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, or are these, there's a little too much ambiguity for me to, I just didn't know what I was buying here. Like, you know, but I think it sounds really interesting, and I'm certainly going to give it a shot. But in terms of putting into the basket, I'm not exactly sure what the ingredients and really looks like here. That was my only pause for this.
Yeah, I'm assuming I circled it for sure. In letters, in that same, like, in the Ta-Nehisi Coates way of doing a memoir in letters. Right. But that's just an assumption.
Mm-hmm. Because so this is correspondence, which implies a back and forth, right? I mean, it's not just correspondence, it's co-respondence.
I'm curious enough now also about the format of it that I want to have it in my hot little hands.
Yeah, and that it's not a ding. It's just in terms of like picking it, I wanted a little bit more sense of what the reading experience itself is going to be like. But it's certainly, I think, you know, this book is going to be talked about all year for sure. I think, there is not just a name to watch, but they have arrived as someone.
I think so, yeah.
That's just on the scene. All right, those are our picks. Do you want to run down your 11 that you chose here and just sort of give us a recap?
Yes. Right. These might not be in order because my notes are weird.
Yeah.
I got Malibu Rising by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Right. The Other Black Girl.
Uh-huh.
Startup Wife. Yeah. After the Fall. The Turnout. Thanks for Waiting. Uh-huh. The Second. Miseducated. After Parties. We Are What We Eat. And Dear Cenytherin.
Okay. And mine are, and these are just in the order of the list, How the Word Is Passed. How the Word Is Passed by Clint Smith, Somebody's Daughter by Ashley Ford, One Last Stop by Casey McQuiston, the Appalachian Trail biography by Philip Denary, The Ugly Cry memoir by Danielle Henderson, Filthy Animals by Brandon Taylor, This Is Your Mind on Plants by Michael Pollan, Committed by Adam Stern, Intimacies by Katie Kitamura, and last but, well, maybe least, we'll find out, Night Bitch. By Rachel Yoder.
Oh, I'm just still way back at being delighted that you're taking the Appalachian Trail one. Constantly surprising me, Jeff O'Neill.
Are you really that surprised? Think of the most boring book on the list. Of course I'm going to pick it.
Well, I knew that you wouldn't take Americanon because just to spite me.
Yes. Mission accomplished. You can vote. podcast@bookriot.com.
Be sure to let him know that voting for me is not a sympathy vote.
That's right. It's wrong, but it's not a sympathy vote. The winner gets the chance to be magnanimous, and the loser earns the right to be a sullen wreck of a person.
You know, I'm just realizing what an act of trust it is that I don't double check our inbox when we're taking votes like this.
It sounds like me, right? Doesn't it? to cheat. Completely misrepresent what our readers are telling us in something where everyone in the company has their credentials to check. Jason Bourne, I am not. All right. Let's see. Then what's next on our bonus slate here? This one's coming out the 19th, so it's actually not coming out for a while.
Yeah. Next on the bonus slate is Best Books of the Year so far, I believe, in early-ish June. Yeah. And then Field of Dreams.
I don't think I have a pick right now. I don't think I have one that I'm like, this has to be on my list. Does something strike you? Do you have one?
I'm going to have to go into my spreadsheets, because those are our personal best books of the year so far.
Yes. And we might do a round of, or a couple picks of the ones that have broken out in some way or the other. We could do sort of where are we?
Yeah.
I don't have one of those at the time at either. Anyway, Rebecca, thanks so much. Fun as always.
This was fun.
Talk to you next time.
Good luck to you.